Okay, it's Diane. It is Tuesday, May 5th, and I'm with the Noon Group. We have Diana and Christine and Teresa here. Diana's new to the group. We're excited to have you here. Why doesn't everybody do just a quick check-in? Diana, when you do your check-in, just tell us a little bit about your family, where you live, and maybe kind of what your biggest challenge is as a mom of a complex kid. So who wants to check in first?
I can go first. So I was on the call last week, and it was just me and Elaine, so which is good because I had missed the call before that because I was dealing with two of my kids came home from school twice, so I was dealing with all that fun. But anyways, so basically what I focused on with her and then worked on with my son, who is 14 and finishing eighth grade and getting ready for high school, is just having a conversation with him about school and what about school was important to him and what his goal was to get through the year, how he was going to do that, and what he needed from my husband and I to help him to reach that goal. So basically kind of putting him in the driver's seat and taking that step back, because my huge concern was just since spring break, school is about the lowest thing on his priority list. And, you know, I just had needed some help with dealing with that, maybe motivating him. And so we did have a conversation, and we did talk about what his goal was and what he needed to do and what he needed from us. And so it went pretty well. But of course, that was just, we've only been working on it for a few days, really, but we have a plan, so that's good.
Well, and it's cool because you took the time to sit down and regroup, and I think that it's, you can do this at any time. I think this is the cool thing about it. You can always sit down and say, what are our goals, where are we headed, or what are your goals, where are you headed? And I love that you're shifting it more towards him. He's at the age that he can begin to, you know, tackle it a little bit more. What are you excited about it?
Well, I think just the fact that he did actually say, well, yeah, I do want to do well in school. So he did quantify that with for the teachers who I feel like work with me, which we're very lucky because this year most of his teachers are very good about working with him. They kind of get him. So we do have one teacher that is not, and it's been an ongoing issue all year. But I was just excited that he did actually out loud say, yes, you know, I do. It is important to me to do well. So I thought, okay, this is good. We can work with this. So.
Well, and a lot of times it's a great even measure of how burned out he is, too. So it's...
Mm-hmm.
Which can be hard this time of year. That's great. Awesome. Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
All right. Who wants to check in next?
Okay. It's Diana. I guess I'll go.
Thanks, Diana.
So my name is Diana, and I live in Laguna Beach, California, and I have two boys. One is in college, freshman in college in New York, and my younger son is 16. His name is Adrian, and he is my complex child. He was diagnosed with ADHD when he was in second grade. At the time, we were living abroad, so the resources were very, very limited. Even just getting medication into the country was very difficult. So we have tried a lot of things, and we have seen a lot of doctors, and I think the impetus, I just came off sanity school, which was a huge, huge lifesaver for us, because the impetus for that was He's a sophomore in high school, and after Christmas break, or winter break this year, we kind of took a couple steps back with him because we felt like he had been doing well, and we really wanted him kind of take ownership of things. So come early March, about 2 months into the semester, we found out he was failing many of his classes, hadn't turned in homework assignments in weeks, and he was just digging a very deep hole. So we kind of all came together. We had meetings with teachers and resource teachers, put plans together to kind of build that scaffolding back up again. And he's improved in the last, I would say, month. So his grades are getting better, his discipline's a little bit better, but he's still, it's still quite a challenge for him. So we are dealing with that. At the same time, we're also dealing with medication issues because he's been on medication for years, and this year he's decided it's really not something he wants to continue to do. So we've been playing with that a little bit with our doctor. So there's a lot of change going on. There's a lot of things happening where next year he's going to be looking at colleges, so the pressure is increasing, and the complexity of the work he's doing at school is becoming more challenging. So we just really need to kind of take aim at a few things and help him get through it and deal with things versus feeling overwhelmed and shut down. I think that's what happened to him this year. So that's my story in a nutshell. So I'm glad to be a part of the class.
Awesome. Diana, we're glad to have you with us as well. And it'll be interesting to see where you go with this. And it sounds like you've made some great progress already. Congratulations for that.
Thank you.
Okay, who's next?
Me, I apparently. Sorry for pushing buttons on you. This is Christina.
Go ahead, Christina.
So I have Ben, who just turned 10. I live in Wisconsin. He's my only and my complex kid. He has ADD and dyslexia. And he also got his dad's IQ, which just makes things really all the much more complicated. It's really not about bragging. It's really makes things much more complicated. I don't know what to say about him. He's at a school for kids with learning differences, and that's really great for him. So the challenges, we're not having a lot of challenges related to school right now, thank the gods. We're having our biggest issue is just sort of getting the good engaged behavior at home for him, and we've kind of come to recognize that we've let him have too much freedom on the computer, and he's basically addicted to the computer. We've been trying to just talk really calmly with him about it so it doesn't become about yelling and screaming to get him off the computer. And that is working because he's able to hear. You know, I'll say I have a problem with addiction to the computer, too, and I've learned that I have to really limit what I'm doing there because I'll sit there all day feeling like I'm doing something. I'm unemployed right now, so I have a lot of free time. And last week he had a meltdown when it was time to get off. And then he said, okay, just log out of the computer, log out of the laptop and your desktop, Mom, so I'm not tempted to get back on.
Yeah.
So he's starting to see, you know, to see that it's an issue, but so that's progress, but it really can be a struggle.
So you're having a hard time with it. He has a hard time with it. What about his behavior specifically? Is difficult, the getting him off, the hyper-focus, what's the big challenge
getting
from your perspective?
Off and the hyper-focus when he's on because he won't eat, he won't tune into what's going on around him, even if we're talking to him, you know, and saying we're getting ready to go, we need to go in 20 minutes, you know, your ride's going to be here any minute. He often will look at us and say, okay, and go back to the computer, and it really didn't even get in. And then he'll throw a shit fit like a toddler when it comes to actually forcing him off the computer. The other day, we had a bunch of family in town for a big family event, and we're trying to go over to Grandma's house, and he slammed the laptop down on my hand and just screaming, and, you know, it was horrible. I mean, before we went over. you know, I know it's the end of the week and he's tired, but, you know, and he had to have many warnings that the time to come was, you know, to get off was coming. The timer, you know, the timer doesn't work. He'll get up and go across the room and turn off the timer and go and get back on the computer and not even be aware that he did that. What, you know, no, my time's not up yet. Well, you turned the timer off. Really
right,
a challenge.
Right. So he's really, the hyper-focus is making it difficult for him to monitor and manage his own emotions, and it's making it difficult for him to cooperate and get off. I mean, so it's and he has a hard time with the transition. So
even when he's off, he's still thinking about it, and we have to log out or he'll keep going back to it. I just want to look this up or finish this one thing, or it's educational, so it's okay. God.
So it'll be interesting to see where you go with today's topic. Do you want to take aim on this, Christina?
Yeah, I think I need to, because I'm about ready to sell all the computers on eBay.
So let's get real specific. Is it, you want to take aim on the transition off of the computer? Do you want to take aim on setting a reasonable boundary for him on the computer? What do you specifically want to take aim on?
I mean, I think... We have reasonable boundaries, but enforcing them can be difficult.
Okay.
I don't know. What do you think? I mean, getting him off is a challenge. You know, we've talked about having him earn time, and he'll make concrete suggestions related to this. You know, if I you know meet all my goals at school all day, and I stay in blue, they have a system they use. For behavior, you know, I'll get 10 minutes for each blue I get. I don't know.
So it's the real. Does it become an issue when he gets so hyper focused that he's not thinking logically and rationally? He's not in problem solving. He's like completely checked out. Is that what the real problem is?
Something like he'll freak out. I have to finish this right now. You know,
right.
And it's, you know, something he said he would put up on his website for a friend, or, you know, it's not like it's homework or anything, and he'll just lose it.
So it sounds like helping him to manage, or, you know, coming up with some strategy, some way to handle the hyper-focus to get him back engaged, because when our kids get hyper-focused, the part of their brain that can problem solve, the part of their brain that can regulate their emotional intensity, the part of their brain that knows that they shouldn't slam the computer on their mom's hand, tends to shut down, right, so that they're just so intense. So the question is kind of what to do to help him in those moments so that he can be more successful in behaving in a human-like way. That's
right, yeah. And I want to empower him to do that rather than being, you know, I'm taking the computer away now.
Well, and I think that's the piece of it is that you're going to figure out what the level of scaffolding is and
right.
You know, it's start by figuring out what's a reasonable expectation. And so I think that that's something to kind of think about as we go through this, Christina, is like what's reasonable for a 10-year-old kid who's hyper-focused on a computer game? And what does that mean in terms of what you need to potentially do differently? So I'll be excited to see where this goes. We'll do some laser coaching if we have some time at the end, okay?
Okay.
Cool. All right. So, Teresa or Diana, where do you want to take aim?
I actually would be interested in taking aim kind of on the same thing, because Connor was doing really well for a while, getting off the video games and stuff when he was supposed to, but we've been having a real issue with that too. Coming up with a way to help him with that would actually work really well for me.
That was Teresa, right? I'm having a hard time with recognizing
the voice. Yes,
I'm sorry, yes. No problem. Okay, cool. Diana, we talked about taking aim in Sanity School. Is it clear kind of what we're trying to do is find one challenge area to get really laser in on today?
Yes, that's in the back of my mind all the time is take aim. What is it that I want to discuss with him? I think for me, it's the same thing I've kind of been taking aim at for a few weeks now, which is how to get him to sit down and initiate his homework. Sometimes it requires a very long lead time or me having to force the issue. Sometimes it's a yelling match. Sometimes it's a, you know, you can't use this or touch that or, you know, whatever. Give me your phone. I'm taking it. Too much texting going on until you can get your homework started. So it's initiating. It's getting him to initiate himself when he knows he has a lot of homework.
Great. So I love that the language is great, which is homework initiation and getting started, because you know that that's an executive function challenge, and that's and it's one part of getting homework done. It's not just getting homework done; it's getting started on it. So
yes.
Great, very specific. Good job. Okay, so let's talk for a little bit about this week's topic. It's humor, and you know it's interesting because I personally don't find myself to be a really funny person, and Elaine is like lives in this household where everybody's just laughing and having just a blast all the time. I love going over there because the energy is just so my own son, sad. It's just not this, like, you know, it's laughter and funniness, and it's just not something that naturally happens as often here, but it's a great tool to use with our kids, because when we go back to those five things that motivate the ADHD brain, both kids and adults, it's urgency and interest and novelty and competition, and then humor and playfulness. And so if we can get to the place where we're, you know, making things light and laughing about stuff, and even if we're, you know, kind of correcting a mistake or we're trying to figure out or solve a problem, if we can be really funny about it and make it a little bit lighter, it makes it easier to problem solve. And it does this for a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, if you're laughing about something, it's hard to be triggered. I think that it's almost impossible to be triggered and laugh at the same time. In fact, you know, I've used laughter as a great tool when your kids start to get triggered and they're starting to get upset. I remember very distinctly a time where I was, my son had like locked himself in his room and he was really angry and frustrated, and I couldn't get him out using like the normal tools and the threats and the things that we always do. And I finally said, okay, if you don't open the door now, I'm going to have to use coaching tool number 423 on you. And then I didn't say anything else. And all of a sudden he just starts cracking up because he's like, coaching tool number 423, what in the world is that? But it was just this sort of joking, lighthearted sort of way to get him to break the intensity of the conversation. The other thing that humor does is it gets our kids out of that, you know, fight or flight part of their brain when they're triggered. It's hard to be angry and be laughing at the same time, or be frustrated and be laughing at the same time. The other thing that we can use humor for is to normalize. You know, so I think that one of the things that tends to happen, if we, you know, there's this framework of humor where it's like, I'm being funny about it, but I'm being snarky about it. So it's like if our kids misbehave, we might say something that's kind of funny but also kind of cutting. And so we want to be really careful about that. A lot of times I think it's really helpful if we tend to laugh at ourselves. And, you know, it's, a lot of us live in households where there's more than one ADDer in the house, or if you're not an ADDer, I mean, our brains all work differently, and sometimes we forget things, and sometimes we get really intense. And, you know, if we can make fun of, not make fun of, but make light of whatever everybody's going through, and just kind of say, wow, that was really crazy. I can't believe I just totally lost it. What was that? Like, Mom looked like Godzilla there for a second. And, you know, just kind of really being more transparent, you can focus the humor on yourself, on the situation. But it's just a really great way to shake up the energy in the household and to get back a sense of balance. And for some of our kids, it works like magic. Like it says here, it says in the workbook, it says, you know, the trick here is to make sure that there's no hidden judgment in it, to make sure that our kids don't feel like we're still judging them even though we're laughing about it. So I'm curious, what kind of goes through your head, ladies, around the idea of using humor to support you in helping your kids?
This is Teresa. And when I do remember to do it, I would say it probably works with my son, I would say maybe like 85% of the time. Sometimes I think he's so into whatever the emotion is, whether it's frustration, anger, disappointment, that he can't get himself out. But a lot of times, if I can kind of turn it around and make it funny or do something silly, especially if his siblings are around and they start laughing, it does seem to kind of break up that tension and kind of help him take that step back and not be quite so intense about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. The thing that just kind of popped into my head is, you know, we talk a lot about code words. You know, is there a way to use a code word with you know, that's kind of a funny sort of thing? And so everybody, whenever anybody's getting too intense, maybe there's some kind of silly face you make that's the, okay, everybody's too intense right now. Let's try to untrigger, or let's try to calm back down again. So what do you notice is, what do you notice is different in that 15% of the time?
I don't really know, because I've never really stepped back to think about that, to be honest with you. So I would have to really kind of go, you know, give a few days and kind of see, like, is it time of day? Is it, you know, I would say that it might be what he's upset about, because let's say something to do with his video game time, like maybe he loses some of his video game time because he spent more time running around outside than he was supposed to, and then by the time he gets his homework done, he doesn't have as much time. Like, if it's something that's really important to him like that, I'm going to guess that maybe it's something like that. You know, where he's already so, like, because anything that interferes with video games, he goes from, like, 0 to 10 in no time. He's just.
Yeah.
So
what I'm hearing you say is that what happens if you try humor in those moments when he's really intense on a video game and it doesn't work? What's the outcome?
He'll just kind of stay in that fight mode, you know, of, you know, you're not going to make me laugh. This is not funny. You're trying to take away, you know, and it's my right to have it. And, you know, he kind of stays in that really upset. It's like it doesn't even sidetrack him at all.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And so do you have an instinct in terms of what other coaching tool might be a good one to use in those moments where you notice he's not responding to the humor right away?
Well, usually what I do is I just tell him I'm going to walk away, and that, you know, when he's calm, then we can come and we can talk about it again. Because at that point, there's no reasoning with him. There's no talking to him. He won't even listen. I mean, if you try to talk, he'll just interrupt with, you know, how unfair it is or whatever.
Yeah. The other thing that kind of pops in my head that some clients will do is using that acknowledging and validating tool. You know, so it's like, wow, I can tell you're really, really upset right now. And
just
leave it at that. So it's kind of like, I can tell you're upset. And you know, maybe he needs to clear a little bit. Maybe he needs to, you know, de-escalate a little bit. But it's just kind of just being there for him, not trying to push him to problem solving, that, you know, just kind of acknowledging that, you know, he's really upset.
Right.
Cool. All right. Anything else come up around this idea of using humor?
Diana, I tried the humor route a couple of times when we first discussed it in Sanity School, and it is definitely an icebreaker. It kind of takes the tension out of the room. The place where it kind of goes a little off track for me is, you know, my son thinks he's a joker, funny kid joker anyway. And so you start to use his humor, and then he, you know, cracks back at you, and then you try and follow that through, and then before you know it, he just wants to keep this thing rolling. It's almost a way to, I guess, avoid the issue. Mm-hmm. So he just keeps trying to be funny and more funny and more funny. And so I get to this point where it's like, okay, enough is enough. You know, we've really got to get back to focusing on what the issue is here. So I don't know. I mean, it backfires for me sometimes in a way where it goes the other way. It's like, how do you stop this train from rolling?
Right. He tends to hyper-focus on the humor then. It's kind of like, oh, cool, this is something else I can joke around instead of getting back in my homework. And so, you know, maybe that's an opportunity for like a time boundary or something to say, okay, so we're going to have, you know, 5-minute funny or something like that, where it's like, okay, we're going to set the timer and we're going to tell all the jokes we can for 5 minutes, or we're going to, you know, crack each other up for 5 minutes, and then we're going to jump back in. And so you're just really explicit about managing the time in a way, or managing the energy in a way where if you see that he's getting hyper-focused on the humor, then you find a way to kind of, okay, let's transition to something else. Does that resonate?
Sort of. I mean, I think for me, for him, it's almost an avoidance tactic. Like, it mm-hmm. just prolongs the real issue, which is I need to stop and sit down and focus and get started. So how do I use it without it becoming a mechanism for him to continue to avoid the task?
Yeah. Well, and so part of it is the two of you together coming up with a toolkit for what are the tools for getting him started, you know. And so if and when you have that, then, you know, I'm envisioning a conversation where you're saying, okay, what are several things that we could do to kind of get you going. And then, you know, when we're in that moment, it's like, okay, it sounds like we're kind of stuck in the funny stuff here. What are your tools do you want to use to get to jump in on your homework?
Right.
You know, so then you kind of know and you agree with him. It's like, okay, so one of my tools is going to be, I'm going to challenge myself to, you know, get my backpack out and unpack in 30 seconds. Or I'm going to, you know, so you might want to kind of use one of those other motivators. And that's the great thing, is that there's more than one motivation. And so if you find that the humor wasn't the motivator, you can use something else.
Right.
So what do you think you want to do with that?
I think the idea of the toolkit, I think we need to find a couple of things that we can agree on that would spark or initiate that next phase. So, I mean, I want to sit around and be comfortable and joke and whatever, feel comfortable talking to him, and not like it's always a vehicle for trying to get him to do something. And that's where I've been getting lately. It's like every conversation, every point of contact, it's a way to get him to do something. And so I want him to try and start learning how to get there himself, so that we can just have nice discussion.
Well, it's interesting. Go ahead.
I was going to say the toolkit might be something that we can work on together. That way I can just say to him, you know what, did you pull your backpack out yet? I mean, and then hopefully leave it at that and be able to just have a discussion.
Well, the other thing that's kind of coming up for me as you're saying that is, you know, when are the times that you're having fun with him that aren't related to motivating him or doing homework? And, you know, can you have, you know, 30 minutes of the day, and I don't know what 30 minutes it is, or an hour of the day where it's like, there's in your mind, this is not a time that I'm going to even have any conversation about homework. I'm going to just enjoy my son. Because it gets so easy to get focused on the what has to get done, especially in that afternoon time frame, because it's like you don't want it to drag out, and you're already anxious and worried that it's never going to get done, and you don't even know what he has to do, and they tend to delay, and it's like, you know, so he doesn't even walk in the door. He's walking up the driveway, and you're already anxious about it, is my guess. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's exactly how it is. It's just like every conversation is somehow leads back to, and I don't like that. I really try hard not to do that, but, you know, they have, at this age, they're getting 2 to 3 hours of homework a night, and that's if they're not a complex kid. So, you know, it could take him four or five hours a night of homework time because of all the distraction. So, you know, I really try and get him to sit and focus, and, you know, he takes his breaks, and we've been able to master that a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, for me, especially because he's dug this hole, trying to climb out of it, you know, sophomore, second semester grades are going to show on his transcripts. So, I mean, it just makes everything a little bit more stressful.
Yeah, of course, and it makes perfect sense that you want to be vigilant about it, but it sounds like it's at the point where it's almost hypervigilance, and so you aren't even finding time to enjoy him anymore.
Yeah.
So if you were going to, so what I heard you say is that you talked about breaks and things like that, so you know that activating the brain is a big part of getting him set up for success in doing his homework. How could you still honor the getting him going, but use some of that activate the brain time to maybe be connection time as well, so you're having fun with him instead of worrying about when is he going to get started on his homework?
Yeah, I don't know. I have to find that. I mean, he's learning how to drive now, so he has his learner's permit, so we do tend to have nice conversations in the car when he's driving. Just, you know, it's a calm moment and we're not stressed over anything, and I want him to stay calm as he's driving. So that tends to be a nice conversation pocket.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I know can be just helpful is to just, even if you pay attention and pay more attention to those moments than you do to the frustration moments. Because we, you know, life is full of both kinds of moments. Sometimes it's just about where you put your attention. You know, so if you spend more time thinking about those moments when you're enjoying each other driving in the car than you do those moments when you're at each other's throats to fight over getting homework done, sometimes that can give you a little bit of a boost and more encouragement to stay in more in the moment. How does that feel?
Yeah, it does. I need to be more mindful. So, and I'm working on that.
Good, good. It's a great word, mindful. I like that. Thank you. All right. So, any other thoughts on humor? I'm going to jump back in because two of you were saying that electronics and hyperfocus and getting off the electronics is an issue. When you think about this idea of humor, how could you use that as a way to support some of the challenges you're having right now with the computer transition?
That's a hard one because he really does take it very seriously.
Yeah, no, and that's a challenge when they take it seriously, and so it may be that it's not a tool, but I think, you know, if you get back to the idea of hyperfocus, and if the challenge is hyperfocus, and, you know, the thing that just popped in my head is, you know, can you have some kind of fun way of talking about hyperfocus? And I just kind of had this visual of, like, walking like Frankenstein, and it's like, hyperfocus. My brain is hyper-focused right now, or, you know, doing, you know, something kind of silly like that, and that it's what everybody does whenever we notice that somebody's getting hyper-focused in the house, and it's kind of like, it's almost like a code word that you use. And so, you know, when he starts to get intense, could it be, before he gets intense, a way to say, you know, is the hyper-focused monster in the house? Or is it, you know, that sort of thing? It's kind of like, is there a place in the escalation point beyond where they you know, that you could use it?
We have done a little bit of that. I mean, it might work. Sometimes he just gets really mad if he feels like it's,
sure,
you know, it's childish and you're, you know, pretending not a kid and stuff. But, you know, can't hurt to try.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it may be that, so, I mean, humor doesn't need to be the only tool that we use. And that's the cool thing. We're developing a toolkit here. And so when you're thinking about the hyper-focus and the difficulty in transition, what do you, and get curious for a minute, from a brain perspective, what do you think is really going on?
I mean, I think he doesn't really have any idea that he's, I mean, all his attention is on that game. He doesn't know if he's hungry or has to go to the bathroom or is cold or, you know, he'll tip that, he sits on this piano bench and he'll tip it over so far that it just falls out from under him. He does that about once a week, you know.
It's interesting because I think about the difference between television and video games, and kids tend to get much more hyper-focused on video games, and I think it's because there's not a natural break. And so one of the tools that I suggest sometimes to parents is to create a natural break, and so that, you know, depending on some video games are really good at this, where there'll be a level, and it's like every time you get to a level, okay, every time you get to a level, you have to do 15 push-ups. Or every time you get to a level, you need to run around the house. Or every time you go, you finish the level, you need to, do a check-in and say, do I need to go to the bathroom? Do I need to eat? Do I need to, you know, there's some kind of natural break at every level. Or to do a break every 20 minutes. And so to have a rule, like commercials come on TV, right? So you always have that commercial time where their brain gets distracted. And even if they try to go change a channel and look for something else for 2 minutes, they're at least shifting their brain. But if you could find a way to say, okay, one of the house rules is that you have to take a stretch break every 30 minutes, or you have to take a whatever break every few minutes,
right,
that can also help manage the hyper-focus because they aren't as on as often. I've had people do things like set the timer on the TV so the TV automatically turns off after a certain period of time. Now, that might freak your kid out and it might make them really mad, but if they know that it's going to do that, then it could also be a competitive thing, which would be, it's like, let's see how far I can get before the TV turns off, kind of thing. So it just would need to be set up in a way that they saw it not as a punishment. So what stands out for you in that?
You know, he's starting to understand that it doesn't really work for him to be on the computer for long periods of time, no matter what. I mean, it just, you know, it's not about us or our family schedule or goals. It's just, you know, you were on there for an hour and a half, and then when you got off, you were miserable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just doesn't seem to work for your body and your brain. And so, you know, but once he starts to get a little bit of ownership of that, instead of just having it be about us telling him it's time to get off, I think.
Well, I guess that's the question. Is this about finding a way to get him to buy into a house rule? Is this about you wanting him to own this and see the value of it? Where are you at?
I mean, a little of both. Because, you know, he's 10. He's in... I think I want to start encouraging him to sort of have that self-awareness. But, you know, he's not always going to agree. When it comes down to it, he's just going to say, no, I'm not hungry. No, I don't need to go to the bathroom.
Christina, let's take the three to five challenge here, okay?
Yeah.
So, and I'm 5 years ahead of you, so I'm going to let's subtract 5 years from 10 and say, what's a realistic expectation for
a five-year-old
who's not only just a five-year-old, but a five-year-old who's hyper-focused on an activity.
Yeah.
So he will develop the maturity. The question is, are you push it when it's there, support it when it's there, find fun ways to enforce house rules that make sense, and while he's learning that it's not healthy for him to be on the computer for extended periods of time.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, he suggests things like, you know, oh, you know, if I get on when I'm not supposed to, you know, tell me you're going to take the computer away for the rest of the week or whatever. And, you know, he claims that those are very motivating for him, like that kind of approach.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. So, Teresa, you're dealing with some of the same stuff. What, either what would you add for Christina or what comes up for you around your own situation?
Well, for my son is a little old. I mean, he just turned 14, and I do keep in mind that his maturity is way below that. Like, I have a daughter that's 11, and I would say sometimes his maturity is probably on par with hers, and sometimes it's
right.
lower. But I find for him that incentives are more motivating than the consequences or, you know, the punishment or whatever, which, you know, we do have to have consequences for him. But if we can get him to focus, like, you know, if we'll say, you know, hey, today, if you get off when your timer goes off, if you get off without us having to come upstairs, you know, well after it's gone off and remind you that you were supposed to get off, then, you know, you can earn so many extra minutes tomorrow. Or, like, that stuff, that kind of thing is a motivator for him. More so than if we would say, you know, if you don't get off on time, you're not playing tomorrow. But that could just be him, you know, individually. But it's just another idea to try. But sometimes when he's so hyper-focused, it just doesn't, I mean, nothing is getting through. So that's why, as you were talking about those breaks, I'm wondering if that might be something that would work for him if we incorporated those breaks and just said, you know, hey, and we have talked about the hyper-focus and we've discussed with him a little bit, you know, how people with ADHD brains are more susceptible to addictions. And we've talked about it with him in, you know, terms of other things besides electronics. But, you know, we have said, you know, what do you think about electronics if you have a really hard time getting off? And, you know, do you think that, you know, you see, like, any of these inclinations or whatever? So we've had those discussions. I wouldn't necessarily say that he's at a point yet where he's ready to take ownership, but we just want him to be aware, and this is definitely an area where he still needs our help. I would love to see him take the driver's seat, and I would love to kind of help give him the tools to do that, but I think it's still, he's not ready to say, this is a problem. You know, mm-hmm. It's mom and dad are the problem. Not,
right.
Know.
And I think that it's great objectivity, because I think that's the important piece of it, is there are times that it's going to be our issue. It's going to be times that it's going to be their issue. It's going to be times that they don't understand that it's a problem, and you know that it's a problem, and that's the place at which you know it's about a boundary rather than so much, you know, buy-in is very much more difficult. Now, you know, I've seen successful situations where, you know, parents will let their kids stay up all night playing just to show them how exhausted they are the next day when they have no energy, you know. But, and sometimes that works and sometimes it backfires. It's just a matter of figuring it all out.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate your perspective there. So when you think about your situation, what's most important for your son?
I would just like him, I think, to be more aware of the effects that the video games have on him, and be more aware of, like, this hyper-focus that he has. And maybe just helping him reach that point, not today or tomorrow, but reaching that point where he can say, you know what, this is an issue. Like, this is something that I am going to have to address.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the thing that kind of popped in for me as you were talking earlier is, you know, for our kids, a lot of times you almost have to sit through and go game by game and say, you know, what makes sense and what doesn't. I know some of the newer games that are out there, there's an incentive to not get off.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no breaks. And so having explicit conversations when your child starts a new game or buys a new game or whatever else to say, okay, let's play this game together for a while because, you know, you're not going to be able to play for 17 hours straight. Let's figure out what a reasonable strategy is so that you can feel like you're successfully getting through the game but not being on forever and ever and ever. And maybe having that as part of the, okay, this is a new game sort of conversation. Or maybe you do that with all the games. Or maybe there's certain times of the day where they can play game A, but because game B doesn't have any easy breaks in it, you know, game B can only be played on Saturdays or something. You know, so you're kind of really managing it that way by helping them to see which ones are going to be easy and which ones are going to be more difficult. Does that resonate?
Right. Yeah.
Cool.
Diane, it's Diana.
Yeah.
Just one perspective from our side. I mean, our son is, like I said, a sophomore in high school, but same thing when he was in middle school. Very addictive personality. The games came first, always. There was never a shut-off button. It was like crack. I mean, it mm-hmm. was really their crack. And it became a real issue, a real problem in our house. We couldn't get him to eat, to talk, to work, to whatever. This isn't for everyone, obviously, but our experience was we decided the rule was going to be no video games on school night. So Sunday through Thursday, there were no video games at all. He couldn't turn it on at all. And then on Friday and Saturday, and then in the afternoon time, Sunday, he could play. We tried to limit it to 2 or 3 hours each of those days because he could go for 6 or 8 hours if we let him.
Yeah.
It was really, really difficult, and it was like having withdrawal system. It was not an easy thing. Fast forward, though, he's 16 now, and he hardly turns the thing on at all anymore. It was like it took a while for it to work out of his system, and it wasn't easy. And we would make him check in his controller. So on the weekends when he got to play, or if for whatever reason we would reward him with a weekday night where he could play, when he was done and it was time to shut down, he had to turn in his controller to me. Because I caught him at 1 o'clock in the morning after he'd supposedly gone to bed and we'd gone to bed. Something woke me up one night, went downstairs. Sure enough, 1 o'clock in the morning, he's on his thing, on the game. So anyway, it kind of took its time to work its way out of his system. I don't know if that makes any sense, but now it's like not a big deal in his world anymore. And maybe it's a level of maturity he's reached, I don't know, but it was almost like he kind of had to go through that withdrawal system in order to get it out.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and part of it is getting really clear about what it is that they're getting from it. And I think that, you know, there are some kids who get the problem solving. They love that intense problem solving. Some of them like just the intensity of the game. Some of them love the social connection. So there's a lot of games where they're playing and they're working with somebody else. And so if you can, you know, be curious with your kids and ask them, you know, what is it that you love about this game? And then find other ways for them to meet that need as a balance. Can be another way to approach it as well. All right, so I want to switch over and do our wrap-up. And Diana, I just emailed you the 4 questions. I don't know if you're sitting at your computer or not, but there's 4 questions that we do at the end of each call, and my guess is you probably don't have those at hand. So I'm on page. You have them. Great. So what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? So take just a minute or two and jot down your notes, and I would love to hear from each of you what your ahas were and what you want to do in terms of action plans for the next 2 weeks, because we're meeting again on, get the calendar up. The 19th, is that right? The 19th. So whenever you're ready, just go ahead and jump in. Let me know. Who wants to do the checkout first?
I will. It's Diana.
Okay, go for it.
So I think my big, I mean, I paid attention to the whole conversation today, but I was particularly interested, obviously, in how to get him to initiate work. My big takeaway was the toolkit idea, and we've got to start working, I think, on some ideas that would help him transition to settling himself down and starting to work. And maybe it's a number of steps, or maybe it's like a pattern that he follows or something. I'm not sure what that is yet. But I think that's what I'm going to take aim at this week. And I think in terms of setting myself up for success, I think this has to be something we do together. So I'm going to, my intent is to talk to Adrian about it and kind of get his input and get his opinion on whether or not this might be something he would want to try.
Cool. Great. What is going to be most important to you about getting his buy-in?
He's not going to do anything that he doesn't agree with or feel. For him, it's more a, if he thinks he's doing it more for me than he's doing it for him, it'll slide. He won't do it. It's got to be something.
Great. So what's your plan for how you're going to get him at the table?
Well, he is at that point, especially with Sanity School. We've had a lot of these, quote-unquote, conversations where I would start out with, here are some things I learned today I want to share with you and see what you think and how you can help be a part of this process. So, and he's seen that work a couple of times already, so I think it has opened his mind a little to trying some things with me.
Awesome. Good. All right. Christina or Teresa?
This is Teresa, and I kind of, you know, focusing on today, just remembering to use the humor and keep it light and fun, because sometimes when I am so triggered or so tired or just so done with dealing with it, any thought of humor flies out the window. So I think for me, I need to just try to remember to use that more, remember that it is there, that, to try it more. and really my my takeaway is that I really need to do more with Connor about the hyper-focusing and the addiction, and my action step is that I really like that idea of creating the natural breaks, and my plan for success is to sit down with him and play the games and together come up with a plan on what we're going to do. You know, how can we set up those natural breaks and, you know, something that's going to hopefully work for him, that he'll work with us and that will work for us. So.
Cool. So, Teresa, right? I just said a brain gap. So, one last checkout.
I think you mean me.
Yeah, I do. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Basically the same thing that the last person just said. You're remembering to use humor, because it can really work very powerfully and just diffuse nasty stuff, like, instantaneously.
Yeah.
And to realize that he's not going to buy in fully. You know, and ultimately, you know, when he's been forced to go cold turkey, you know, he acts for an hour or two like we've just removed his fingers or something. And then he just finds a project to do, and he makes a raft out of milk jugs, or, you know, just acts like a normal kid. And, you know, practices his yo-yoing, and, you know, or enjoys whatever activity we've dragged him kicking and screaming out to do. And it's fine. And just to remember that that's the reward. Maybe he's not going to see it, but that, you know, when we do go through with the hard thing of pulling off the computer, that he enjoys life and we enjoy him. So.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So, again, we're meeting next week, or no, not next week, but the week after. So the next session is on the 19th. So, Diana, again, welcome to the group. We're glad to have you here, and look forward to staying connected, everybody.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
The moderator has left the conference. Thank you. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.